Coming up on This Week in Computer Hardware, frame rating, the Xbox One X, Dell's 27-inch Inspiron 7000 all-in-one, the fastest AIO we've ever tested, Verizon's going wireless, what? And Intel's firmware fiasco will eventually get updates. All that and more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twitch. Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 442, recorded November 30th, 2017. Intel's got a firmware fiasco. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Eero. Never think about Wi-Fi again with Eero's hyper-fast, super-simple Wi-Fi system. And now the second-generation Eero is tri-band and twice as fast. For free overnight shipping to the U.S. or Canada, visit Eero.com, select overnight shipping at checkout, and enter code TWICH. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com/twitch to save 20% off any order. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/twitch. Welcome to Twitch This Week in Computer Hardware. Twitch weekly show that aims to bring you the most useful, most engaging, most informative, and occasionally the most tongue-tied discussion of computer hardware available anywhere. We love mobile, we love consoles, but mostly we're about desktop and laptop PCs. But today, ladies and gentlemen, there will be a special concentration and a fear-filled report from PC Per Senior Storage Editor Alan Malventano about why you should not upgrade to Samsung's latest 960 Pro firmware. Brace yourselves, people. You there, man?
Wow, you can't overhype when all my messages is don't update the most recent firmware yet because it's some kind of buggy thing going on there.
I was feeling the hype today. I listened to some public radio.
I mean, 960 Pro, I'm not sure what the... I need to look at, like, change notes. I'm not quite sure what the firmware was supposed to fix, but there's multiple reports from folks, you know, stating that their system was intermittently hanging and freezing once they did the update. Right. And it was because of the drive. The drive was just, for whatever reason, was just kind of stalling. So if you're on, if you got a 960 Pro, it's chances are it's probably working just fine for you. Don't do the firmware update. Not yet, at least.
Don't fix what 8 broke.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wise words, ladies and gentlemen. Console frame rating. Ryan has, this is, well, Ken wrote this one up.
Yeah, this is Ken's brainchild. He actually, he came across an open source software package called Teardrop. It's a play on Teardrop, which is what the logo looks like. But it basically is just a computer vision style thing that you can feed a video and it will figure out the actual frame rate of the content. In other words, if you had a, you know, say a console, for example, same applies to PC games and or any platform for that matter. But if the game couldn't keep up with the refresh rate of the display, and if you had VSync on or off, you would have different effects. You'd have like every other frame would be skipped, or there might be a tear in various places along the, you know, along the screen as the game was going on. Mm-hmm. Well, the software package will kind of analyze the given video clips. You can even do side by side. I think it does up to three-way, like, you know, side-by-side-by-side thing, where and it actually shows you this neat plot on the screen of, like, you know, as time progresses, what is the frame rate doing in the either the single video or the video is being compared, and it'll draw multiple lines in that case. I think, actually, if you go to the video in that piece, which is near the top, and you go to, like, somewhere a little bit past the halfway point, there's some side-by-side stuff going on there. Yeah, that's right. Actually, there's even some on the screen right there. So it's pretty cool tool, right? You're able to do comparisons side by side. It's not perfect because, you know, you have two different consoles. You don't know exactly what level of quality detail is going on there. You don't know texture detail. This tool can't give you that information. It can just give you, you know, what are the frames per second of this thing that there exists no other way to really, you know, measure that data, right? All you can really do is just capture the output and look at it programmatically. So it's good stuff. It's similar to frame rating, which is the way that on PC Per we have tested, you know, desktop GPUs in the past, and even in the future. But we have a couple of extra bells and whistles we use for that. There's an overlay that actually kind of gives us a clue into when the frames transition from one frame to the next, and totally different pieces of software. But it still involves capturing the output so that there's absolutely no interference from trying to use the system itself in order to, you know, evaluate itself, if you will. So, I mean, you know, cool stuff. Definitely worth a look. It's probably going to lead to some other content in the future. All of these tests were for 1080p. Arguably, probably the majority of console gamers right now are still on 1080p sets. I'm sure there are a few that are on 4K. We have sourced the necessary hardware to do that capture, 4K 60, which is trickier than it sounds because it's an awful lot of bandwidth. It's like a gigabyte per second raw writing that you need to be able to do without the SSD kind of hiccuping at all or whatever your destination is. So we're going to be doing that in the future, probably some 4K testing of, you know, various games and whatnot on competing consoles. Maybe even be able to compare some against the PC ports of the same.
Nice.
So yeah, you know, just new thing Ken's toying around with, and hopefully it'll lead to you know, even more interesting content in the future.
Nothing wrong with that. Plus, you know, the ongoing battle between console fanboys and desktop fanboys.
we're not trying to fuel that. We were just like, that's why we're not comparing any desktops there. We're just like, hey, there's this new console came out. Let's take a look at it with with this new method of testing we're baking up.
Nothing wrong with that. Radeon Software Adrenaline Edition, Crimson Relive Edition is going away. And this caught my eye, of course, because I've been playing around with Dell's all-in-one 27-inch Ryzen Radeon-powered machine, which I should probably mention in the show today. There's going to be a new driver family in 2018. The Adrenaline Edition is going to go live in December and will be the new name of their drivers for 2018, writes Mr. Hellstrom up on PCPer.com. And everything else we know is pretty much under NDA.
I mean, the same. Yeah, I can speak in some generalities. Like in the past, like with that Relive Edition, you know, they paid attention to their user feedback. They actually have like a list of like what's the most popular things that their users want to see in the software. So like, you're probably going to see, you know, more of this paying attention to their community because that's the smart thing to do, right? It's just a matter of the details of exactly what's in there are not out yet. I know there's a Reddit thread where people are clamoring for change logs or even maybe submitting their own hypothetical change logs.
Hypothetical.
Many jokes. very hypothetical. But I just kind of wish that there wasn't the demo video they put out seems to be fueling the people that are kind of making fun of there not being more detail out there. But there should be detail soon. So that's all I can say.
Yeah. That's all you can say for now, people.
Sorry.
I am Muck. No, it's a perfectly reasonable response. meanwhile, Linux gaming performance or Linux Radeon gaming performance with the Mesa 17.4 Dev Radeon stack still lags behind Windows performance. This is not a particularly massive shock, but it is nice to know that Radeon gaming performance is still moving forward. Slowly but surely on the Linux platform. And there's been a lot more Linux games, which is part of what makes this article interesting to take a look at. The Phoronix crew were up on that. And I think they also recently took a Dell Optane processor and found out that it is obnoxiously fast running Linux.
Oh, yeah,
those
were those same guys, I'm pretty sure, that they did a separate piece comparing Optane SSD. I think they were just testing... Oh, yeah, I think recently they did the 900p. Before that, they had done just the 32 gig Optane memory, what's meant to be a cache, But as you might imagine, Linux installs generally are way smaller than a Windows install, unless you really want to boat it up with a bunch of extra software. But like generally speaking, you can make a Linux install super tiny. So totally practical for a person to buy a 32 or even the 16 gig Optane memory module, which acts just like any other M.2 NVMe SSD, unless you're using the Intel software to make it into a cache. So that did really good for them when they tested that. And of course, the 900P was even another step up. And I'm not sure if they went into the crazy bells and whistles you can turn under Linux. Like you can do polling and hybrid polling modes, which will actually make a 900P go, I think you gain another 30 or 40% reduction in latency.
Right.
Because you're not waiting on an interrupt request to complete and get the processor attention, which is kind of like the hard drive era version of asking a storage thing for information. Now when the stuff is so fast, it's becoming faster than the mechanism used by the system to get the data. So, changes must be made to take better advantage of these things. But I'm pretty sure it's those same guys. But, Linux gaming, like, I wish it was here more in force. Because Linux is a solid platform. But, it's not there yet.
In any case, Peronix.com, great place to get information on Linux hardware performance, RX580 Polaris and RX Vega 64 GPUs in that roundup. I was thinking that Steam's adventures in Linux would push it a little faster than it has, but we can still dream, man. We can still dream. Oh, my goodness. One last thought before we go. I took a review on TechThing this week, Dell's Inspiron 27 All-in-One. And, I'll be honest with you. I actually like it more than the XPS 27. The XPS 27 has the super fancy speakers and has, an optional touch screen that you can fold flat. But what's really crazy about the Inspiron 27 All-in-One is that they are shipping it with a AMD Radeon processor and AMD Ryzen processor and AMD Radeon graphics. And I was really, really impressed by the performance because it's essentially, these are not the horrible days of looking at, laptop motherboards stuffed inside of monitors. We're looking at, and the one I looked at, an AMD Ryzen 7 1700, 16 gigabytes of RAM, Windows 10, 256 gigabyte SSD, 1 terabyte hard drive, an NVMe SSD, and then a 4K 27-inch monitor and an AMD Radeon 580 at $1,800. So not the most inexpensive, but it's an all-in-one unit, and it was rendering video. I was shocked. The performance in terms of video rendering was pretty capable and closing in on what I run on my desktop, the 1800X. I mean, the 1800X still beats it, right? It's got a whole bunch more cores to throw at the problem of video rendering. They still put, you can see it if you're watching the video right now, they still put the webcam on the bottom of the monitor, which is maddening. But the performance was pretty fantastic. It is by far the fastest all-in-one I've ever tested. Rocket League gaming, I was running 2560 by 1440, not 4K, but, the reality for stuff like Rocket, you don't need 4K graphics for Counter-Strike or Rocket League. But the gaming, looked good on the 4K monitor. In terms of like massive, like I'm video editing or something like that, you're looking at like 6 minutes and 30 seconds on my Radeon 1800X. And the same test file on the XPS 7000 was running 7 minutes and 32 seconds. So obviously that's, considerably slower. But that's still 3.5 minutes faster than, my 2-year-old Core i7 6700 desktop. So, something to be said for an all-in-one machine that is fast, and it's got a ton of ports, HDMI in, HDMI out, 3 USB ports, one of which is powered USB-C. And, you know, conveniently enough, on the side of the monitor, you've got not just a headphone port, but an SD card slot and another USB jack. No vertical adjustment, which is kind of frustrating. So you're going to have to stack it on, I guess phone books don't really exist anymore, but you can find bricks or something to stack it on if it's not high enough. But really nice piece of hardware for the money. And I'll be honest with you, I think I actually like it better than the XPS all-in-one. So I just wanted to get that out there.
Sweet. I noticed you had there was a NAS RAID level question on that same show.
We talked about RAID 5 versus RAID 6.
They wanted to put four drives in a Synology NAS.
Yeah, well, that was a QNAP NAS.
QNAP, sorry.
And it's funny because, you know, there were all these articles back around 2006, 2010, where they were discussing it that based on the number of unrecoverable errors on drives, that RAID 5 was going to be effectively useless by 2009 and then RAID 6 would be useless by 2019. And, you know, on the upside is that, hard drive manufacturers stepped up their game and the frequency of UREs has dropped precipitously. So RAID 5 is still useful for now. RAID 6 is going to be useful for a long time. And for people who haven't been paying attention to RAID, right? You know, if you have a two-disc RAID box, you can basically do RAID 0 or the RAID of death, which is striping across the two discs for speed. But if one of the discs dies, you've lost all your data. RAID 1 is what we generally recommend for a two-drive NAS, which is a mirror image. All the data is available on both drives. So if one drive dies, you still have all your data on the other drive. Things get interesting around RAID 5, which stripes and delivers parity data across all the drives. So if you lose one drive, the information lost on that drive can be reconstructed from the notes, the cribbed notes on the other drives. RAID 6 does two parity stripes, so you can recover up to two lost drives. And RAID 10 and is just too complicated to get into, and just a bunch of discs is kind of silly.
I have a better diagram of RAID 0. It's on my shirt.
Yes.
There you go. That's exactly. There you go.
Fast but stupid. fast but risky.
I mean, if you have a backup and you want to make it out of SSDs, fair enough. But don't do it with hard drives. But
It's full,
yeah, I mean,
the
for,
thing
four,
is
for
like,
four drives, like, it's really just down to, like, you know, what they, how much space they're willing to give up and how much reliability they want, right?
And if you want like the ultimate and overhead, right? So, I mean, if you're going to try to run RAID 6 on this thing, I would definitely spend the money to dump a couple. You can do like 8 gigs of SODIMM to cache stuff. I would definitely be putting the 8 gigabytes into there. I think RAID 6 is probably smarter on larger hardware. We basically said go with RAID 5, especially since the fellow in question, Brent, he's got no cap on his data, and he's doing online backups of the entire contents of the NAS. You know,
because a RAID is not a backup solution.
A RAID is a component in your backup solution. It is one of the 3-2-1 backups. It is not all the backups.
Yeah, but just makes one of the things a little more reliable and resilient. That's all it really does for you. Like,
there's
always consider
wrong with
that
more
the
resiliency.
Always consider that the entire box could just go away.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it doesn't matter if it's RAID 5 or RAID 6. Like, then, I can deal with two hard drive failures. Well, you can't deal with one failure anywhere else in that component.
Well,
like, that thing could just go down. You know, the CPU could fail. As rare as it might be, it could. The whole thing could light on fire for some reason. You never know.
It could get stolen.
Right? It could
you
get
never
stolen.
Know what terrible things will happen. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Eero. With Eero, you can install an enterprise-grade Wi-Fi system in your home in just a few minutes. It is so easy. Just download the Eero app on your iOS or Android device, and it'll walk you through each step of the process. Quick, easy, and painless. I got to say, I've run the app at a couple different locations, and I love it. You can easily create and share a guest network, know how many devices are connected at any given point, and check the internet speed you're getting from your service provider. Eero is protected with a state-of-the-art WPA2 encryption. Within 24 hours of the crack Wi-Fi vulnerability revelation, Eero automatically pushed out a fix to all of their customers. How cool is that? Their incredibly fast response time and ability to push out updates automatically sets Eero apart from other solutions and traditional routers. And I'm telling you, a lot of routers I've used in the last couple of years still haven't been updated, certainly aren't updated for crack. And if you're serious about security, you might want to think about upgrading your system. So the second generation Eero brings the Eero Beacon, right? If you're not familiar, Eero Home Wi-Fi, they started back in 2016. They've learned from hundreds of thousands of systems, making them smarter, faster, and more reliable. The Eero Beacon, the second generation Eero, lets you build a Wi-Fi system that's more tailored to your home because you can just plug it into a wall. It's super easy. More speed and range and the same high-quality, elegant design that people have come to expect. With the addition of a third 5 gigahertz radio, the second generation Eero is now tri-band, and Eero says it's twice as fast as its predecessor. It lets customers do more simultaneously in every room of their home. And with the addition of a new Thread radio, Eero can connect to low-power devices such as locks, doorbells, other sensors, and more. Expanding your coverage in any room is easy with Eero Beacon. Simply plug it into a wall and you're covered. You can add as many Eero Beacons as you want. If there's an outlet, there's Wi-Fi. For free overnight shipping to the U.S. or Canada, visit Eero.com and at checkout select overnight shipping, then enter Twitch to make it free. That's Eero.com and enter the code TWICH. We want to thank Eero for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. Goodness. I like mesh Wi-Fi. I'm just going to say that.
Yeah.
The BitScope Raspberry Pi cluster module, I just wanted to bring this up, a 6U rackable drawer that holds 144 Raspberry Pi 3 single board computers, and more importantly, all the power networking and air cooling needed to keep everything running. Tim Berry wrote this up on PC Per. This is crazy, right? The BitScope blades can each hold up to 60 Raspberry Pi PCs or single board computers like the Odroid C2. And it's pretty crazy because you end up with a giant supercomputer for like less than, well, a small supercomputer for less than $25,000. BitScope's apparently building a platform for Los Alamos, the National Laboratory. 5 cluster modules for a whopping 2,880 64-bit ARM cores, 720 gigabytes of RAM, and a 10 gigabit Ethernet SFP plus fabric backbone. It's so crazy.
Now before everybody goes, but they're only Raspberry Pis. The thing to remember is that this serves more as like a, not benchmark, but just like, this is the thing you use to develop software for supercomputers, right? If you're okay with the software running slower, but you want to make sure that the software can work with a thread of the software running on thousands of cores at the same time and having to communicate across to other cores over the network, right?
It's a little more difficult to build and proof software for thousands of cores because most of us have access to like 4 cores or 8 cores or 16 cores. And oddly enough, thousands of cores across hundreds of boards is a little bit different.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely a cool device for a reasonable price compared to what the actual alternative cost.
Oh my goodness. It's a frightening thought. Oh, I don't think we covered it last week, so I just want to pop this out there. Intel Core i7-9700K could have 8 cores and 16 threads, much like the AMD Ryzen processor in the desktop I'm running right now. WWCF Tech has a few rumors, right, Scott Michaud? Based on Ada 64 release notes and HKEPC, and it's hard to tell, The details are a little fuzzy at this point, right? Cause some look like they might be 14 nanometer, some might be 10 nanometer. So the code names are a little fuzzy. But it looks like they're going to drop an 8-core, 16-thread processor next year. So we will see what goes on with that.
The thing that interests me the most about this in particular is that if you're looking for the more nimble processor, in other words, the lower latency between cores and the lower latency between cores and the memory, it's actually better to stick with lower numbers of cores. So, it's silly to just go for the 22-core processor and spend insane amounts of money when you have to realize that even though there's this mesh bus that's supposed to be better than a ring bus with a bunch of cores on it that takes a longer time to get to the right core, which is why they introduced the mesh with the higher, you know, higher numbers of cores in a processor.
Right.
The more cores you have, the harder it is to communicate between them. Right. So these CPUs, even though they're all the way going all the way up to 8 now, are probably still going to have the same ring that you had in like a 7700K. In other words, the latency between cores would still be relatively low compared to higher core count Intel parts. But more importantly, if you're interested in the competition, the 8 core Ryzen parts have what's called core complexes on them. Two core complexes, basically it's two separate dies that have to communicate between each other. So if you're trying to talk to memory that's connected to the other die, or you're trying to communicate to the other die, like it takes, it's something on the order of like twice as long latency wise in order for that communication to take place versus like a 7700K, like a more nimble part, right? And a 9700K would be similar. The 8700K, when we did that review and we tested it, we made sure that those latencies behaved the same way that the 7700K did. So the 6-core part worked the same way as the 4-core part. This 8-core part probably will do the same thing as well, but that's probably the limit. Go past that, that's where you have to start shifting over to the mesh technology to communicate, because you just have too many cores to have them all attached to the same set of wires, basically. Just to put it real super simply, yeah.
My goodness. While we're talking about Intel, if you've been following along, Intel has admitted that the rumors that there are massive multiple flaws in its management engine, the server platform services, and trusted execution engine that, and this is kind of frightening if you're a sysadmin that relies on these tools or has them implemented in thousands of machines. You could run code that your operating system can't see. It'll run at such a low level. So it looks like the fixes are on their way. But as the Register notes, TBD is a scheduled date for hundreds of PC fixes. So Intel admitted that there are actual legit flaws in the management engine. But like Lenovo's got TBD, Acer has 240 models under TBD, Dell, the Register notes, has just 191 TBD PCs. And then January 7th gets 9 models get a fix. The 14th, there's another 10 machines. A few more models on the 2nd. And 9 machines will get their fix on Christmas Eve 2017. The end of January 2018 for a bunch of Panasonic machines. And Intel says they'll have their fix for the Nook, the Compute Stick, and Compute Card products in December. So if you are running this, keep an eye, or if you're, you know, just keep an eye on this. This is unpleasant.
Just for an idea, for those unaware, like what the management engine thing is, it's meant to be for like infrastructure maintenance of systems. You have a whole bunch of computers installed in some company somewhere or whatnot, and you need to be able to maintain them. This actually gives you, with the correct permissions when it's working properly, better than root level access to the hardware. Like you can do things with the system that doesn't even care if the OS is installed, running, none of that matters. You could basically just access whatever the heck you want on the machine. Now, that's great from a remote management of systems standpoint. It's really bad when the security has an issue and then, you know, some random person can just remotely do whatever they want with your system data, any of that stuff. You know, it's kind of bad. There's actually, I'm not sure this story was in the list, but very recently, within the past couple of days, and actually it was the most read link on the side of that Register article, at least it is right now, the Apple, the Mac OS root exploit, which basically meant that if you typed, root is normally a deactivated account on Macs because you normally are not logging in as root. There was a bug in their authentication and how their authentication, like basically the system that checks for passwords when you type something in, when you try to log into something. Basically on every Mac on the most recent version of Mac OS, you could just type in root and leave the password blank, and it might not work the first time you hit enter, but it would work the second or third.
Yeah. Well, that has been patched remotely.
It has been. But I'm saying it here just so that if you're the kind of person that ignores the update thing on your Mac, it might be time to be okay with it this time. And just if it needs to reboot, let the thing reboot, whatever. Just deal with it, because this is a simple enough thing where any joker in your office or any malicious actor or anybody that gets a hold of your laptop, they basically just type root and just it doesn't matter what the password is. As a matter of fact, I think even with the way that bug works is you could even have a password. You could even type in a password for root, like what you wanted it to be. And I believe the system actually sets it to that password. So it's like, it's not just you can get in. You can actually just say what you wanted the root password to be. And and you might actually trick the system into setting it to said password. But yeah, there is a way around. There was a video just on the screen about like a quick walkthrough of how to get around that. Basically, the gist is you enable the root account, and you could set your own password. Now you don't have to worry about that, because you've now there is a password that's hopefully not blank associated with that account. So that fixes you right away. But there is, you know, if you want to do it manually, but again, there is a patch that fixes the way that it checks the authentication there. So definitely do that.
Oh my goodness. Do not wait.
Don't wait.
Ugly. Yeah. Well, in theory, though, it's just restarting your machine should put the new patch in place, from what I was reading in some other threads. But
yeah, I think it was one of those that they basically push instead of pull. Like the system, yeah.
This is a good one to push.
Yeah, it's a very simple change, too. It's only like there was a, I forget which website did it, but somebody did an amazing reverse engineering analysis of what the code was doing before and what it did after, where the error was, what the bad comparison was in the code. And it was just, I love that sort of thing because I have a reverse engineering background. So I just love to be able to see someone else like did all the hard work of reverse engineering, you know, kernel level code.
I think it was objective-c.com. A guy named Patrick Wardle, I think, walked everybody through that.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. So again, very small amount of code changed. And it really was down to one thing, not checking the right thing. It's just one, you could have patched it by changing like one byte worth of code throughout the entire operating system.
That's awkward.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Hey, let's take a moment to thank the folks at Tracker. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Tracker. We're all looking for something, love, purpose, unforgettable experiences, or maybe your car keys. Gotta love it when they wander off. 8 years ago, Tracker changed everything when they released their first tracking device, and now they've done it again with the all-new Tracker Pixel. With Tracker Pixel, you never worry about losing your things again. It's the lightest Bluetooth tracking device on the market. Just place Tracker Pixel on whatever you tend to lose, your keys, your wallets, your remote. It's small enough to fit on your smallest items. And when you misplace an item that has a Tracker Pixel attached, you go to the Tracker app on your smartphone, you press a button, and a 90-decibel alert will help you find it in seconds. It even has powerful LED lights so you can find your items in the dark. Lose your phone? Just press the button on your Tracker Pixel and your phone rings even if it's on silent. You can even locate your items if it's miles away, because every Tracker user is part of the largest crowd locate network in the world. And Tracker's 30-day money-back guarantee means you truly have nothing to lose. Tracker makes a great gift, and during this holiday season, you can save 20% off your order when you go to thetracker.com/twitch. That's thetracker.com/twitch for 20% off. thetracker.com/twitch. We want to thank Tracker for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. Oh, my goodness. So, from the incredibly insane over-the-top updates department, if you are looking for all of the power in a power supply unit, you're going to need a 230-volt line. That's the stuff your stove or your dryer plugs into. And what I'm talking about here is the magnificent FSP2000 AOA GPBI. This is the most out-of-control power supply I have ever seen. 2,000 watts. For standard advanced workstation server and industrial power systems, 80-plus platinum, so you won't be wasting that much electricity, which is a big plus when you're talking about a 2,000-watt power supply. I think this is going to show up more in industrial applications than consumers. But if you've been obsessing over being able to run, you know, all of the graphics cards simultaneously and, you know, maybe off two machines at the same time, this is the GPU for you. No ship date, no pricing information, but I'm going to hazard a guess that it's going to be really expensive and probably kind of a pain to find. Not so hard to find.
It has 16 8-pin PCIe power connectors.
So that's
eight big GPUs or 16 smaller GPUs that only have single connectors on them. That's a decent number.
It's a large number.
Oh,
man. Somewhat easier to find. Of course, there's Crystal Series 460X RGB tempered glass case review. I gave props to Sebastian. Scroll down to that first picture. He made this case look beautiful. I just want to say that right now. A little bit smaller than the other tempered glass cases that have come from Corsair recently. If you keep scrolling down, you'll see a sort of magnetic lid that goes over the vents at the top, which I'm a big fan of because I've had top vented machines where they just became giant dust magnets. But really good looking case. Full reviews up on PCPer.com. I will give you a hint. It got a gold PC Perspective award and sells for a little under $130. So, you know, I normally don't get really excited about glass cases and I kind of don't like windowed cases, but I like this windowed case. It's glass. It's delightful.
And, yeah. It's really sharp looking.
It's a sharp looking case. Oh my goodness. Nest, are you using a Nest thermometer or a similar thermometer type device?
I do indeed have it. I have one at my house. Ryan has one at his house. We have two at the office since there's dual HVACs. So yeah, we got a few.
I hear dual and you said dual and I heard dueling HVACs. It's been interesting. Like Nest got bought by Google, then sort of half escaped from Google. And now the rumor, according to the Wall Street Journal, is that Google is going to kind of pull back Nest into Google's hardware unit to be a little bit more competitive with Amazon, which on one hand makes sense. And on the other hand, given some of the issues I've seen with Google's hardware over the last couple of years, a little nervous about. But it should be interesting to watch Google and Amazon fight over, sort of voice controlled home automation, because I got to say Google's Home has caught up incredibly fast to a lot of the features that are available in Amazon's Echo system.
I always get worried just about Google's habit of like calling everything beta and then just deciding to toss various things to the side. So I hope that, you know, I there would be a huge uproar, but I wouldn't be completely shocked if, like, you know, then a week after the thing or a year after the thing, Google's like, we're not going to support Nest anymore or something, instead of spinning it back off.
Yeah, we'll find out. I mean, it's Google. Nothing is certain.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting note. Apple has made a big deal about its healthcare efforts around the Apple Watch. And then the FDA cleared AliveCor's Cardioband. It's the first medical device accessory for the Apple Watch. They have sort of the basic version of it you're looking at right now where you press your fingers against it. It gives you a 30-second EKG. That's $99. If you scroll down a little bit on that page, you'll see their $199 Apple Watch Band. And that is literally the first medical, it's FDA approved to do an EKG on your wrist. I just thought really cool.
Just so we're clear, that's far more accurate than what the watch can do by itself with just its light based.
Yeah.
This is like an electrode based EKG thing, as opposed to just the Apple Watch just kind of looks at your blood vessels.
Yeah.
This
is an actual EKG instead of instead of monitoring your pulse, basically.
Yeah,
I just thought it was pretty fascinating. And especially when you look at the pricing for that, to buy this is probably going to be, you know, my copay is half the cost of buying this.
Right.
You know, for a regular doctor's appointment. I just thought it was really neat.
It is a neat trick because it's using, you know, usually what it's trying to do is make a circuit through both of your arms. And it's just kind of like it's already on your wrist. So that's half the circuit. That's why you just put your thumb on the on the pad, you know, and then that just makes the circuit for you. That's pretty cool.
Good stuff. Yep. Oh, my goodness. We're going to talk about some wireless internet things in just a moment. We might even brush up against net neutrality. I know some of you are against net neutrality, but I am not one of those people. So battlefornet.com. But we want to say that this episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. The mortgage experience not keeping up with the times. A little frustrating, a little painful, dated, and often not really about the client. So Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Really simple. You can fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient. Trusted partners, you can share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button, and it's powerful. Doesn't matter if you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage can perform thousands of calculations in seconds to make your life easier based on your income, your assets, and your credit. Rocket Mortgage can analyze all the home loan options for which you qualify and find the one that's just right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Do yourself a favor. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/twitch. That's rocketmortgage.com/TWICH. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. I bring that up. Well, I don't know. I'm looking for a segue here. You know, one of the other stories that came up is that Verizon is going to be selling 5G wireless home broadband or selling wireless home broadband using 5G networking technology late in 2018, starting in Sacramento, California, and hitting 3 to 5 cities that don't currently have Fios. And what I did not know is Verizon's already held residential trials in 11 markets this year to calibrate the technology. Wall Street Journal had a write-up on this. It is interesting, particularly for me, because I am currently getting 5 gigahertz wireless via a rooftop device from a company called Common Networks. They're a startup. A bunch of people that used to work at Square came up with the idea of doing wireless internet distribution, running over a big 5 gigahertz network. And it's connecting rooftops. It's like a big mesh network. It's over the city I live in, Alameda. That's where they're proving their concept, which is great for me because I live in Alameda. And I'm hoping the testing works out really, really well because I want other people to have this option because, you know, when I signed up initially, it was like 50 gig or 50 megabit up, 50 megabit down for $75, no, for $50 a month. And now it's 75 megabits down, 75 megabits up guaranteed for $50 a month, except I'm usually getting in excess of 125 gigabits per month. Or 125 megabits, sorry, up and down. No cap that I know of. It's $50 a month. So for me, and with the amount of video I do, to be able to upload 10 times faster than what I was getting on Comcast for a third less, maybe more than a third less, maybe 40% less, huge deal for me. You know, so we saw in you know, traditional telephone service, a lot of places that had never been hardwired, it is so much less expensive to do wireless delivery that they went up, that, you know, wireless phones became the standard rather than wired phones. And I think it's going to be very interesting to watch how Common Networks and others move into the home ISP space. Because for me, I waited 7 or 8 years for someone that could deliver me as good or better than Comcast and not be Comcast. And I got better than Comcast for less money than Comcast with better support than Comcast on a month-to-month deal with no one-year commitment. And not once have they called me during the dinner hour to try to sell me you know, telephone or television, cable television upgrades that I do not want. So hopefully it'll be successful. We'll see what happens. And it's been interesting because I had a lot of questions where people are like, oh, does rain impact it? Not so far. We got some pretty heavy rain so far, and our internet connection has not suffered. They've done a pretty good job. It may help that there are some tall buildings in the center of the town that they can point antennas to, and then they do multiple antenna connections. We started out with sort of one antenna on my house, and I think now there's two or three attached to the same pole on the top of my house. But $50 a month, I like it. Ladies and gentlemen, we should probably give a quick shout out to PC Perspective's holiday gift guide. Were you involved in the production of this, Alan?
Or any of your picks? I have a page. There's some picks in there. On the front page, there's various PC components, of which I chimed in for a solid state drive pick. Basically just 850 Evo if you're looking for among the lowest cost and also among the highest performing SATA SSDs. And then I think Josh picked like a 960 Evo, so he kind of stole that one from me if you wanted to go NVMe. In my own picks, I picked like a silly expensive camera that, is cool but expensive. And then all the guys kind of threw in a bunch of picks. Maury picked some cool-looking coolant mm-hmm. for a system, among a bunch of other motherboard picks that he had put on the front page. But for his, he picked some water blocks. Maury's a big water cooling guy, so he likes that stuff. But if you scroll down just a little bit more, there's the PrimoChill View coolant, which had just recently come out, and that's that kind of. I forget what kind of soap used to look like that, but it has this pearl kind of look to it because it has, as it moves, kind of has right. this really cool look to the coolant. In my
That's
opinion,
awesome.
one of the best things to put in a water cooled system, because otherwise otherwise they look plain. There's coolant in the lines, but you can't tell that right. anything's moving. Right. Whereas coolants like that are just look
you'll also see where there's in turbulence practice. In your lines or connections.
Yeah, you get to see all that, and it looks really, really cool, especially like the reservoir. You see it all swirling around in there. However, historically, coolants like that have had issues where the effect comes from an actual, really tiny particle-style
right.
material that's floating around in there. And a lot of these coolers on water-cooled systems have really fine... just like microfin designs where the channels are super tiny and right. the coolants were actually interfering with the coolers because they were clogging up the channels. This stuff's guaranteed to not do that. Apparently their particles are so small that it really doesn't matter. They've been testing this for a while. I've seen on Jay's Two Cents, YouTube channel, he's been testing it and putting it in various builds and it's looked great. So I'm glad to see that finally came out for people to purchase. First time I saw that was like a few CESs ago in just some demo system from some company. And I literally stood there for like a half an hour when I actually had other stuff I needed to be doing and kept taking pictures of this system just because it was such a hypnotizing kind of effect. It just looked really cool.
Right.
Yeah, so there's some other picks in there. Just encourage the folks to look. There are GPU picks in there that are going to be touch and go because we put them in there. It was, first of all, hard to find ones that were actually MSRP as far as pricing goes because mining payouts have kind of been creeping up over the past couple of weeks. Those that are, and that has resulted in the graphics cards that had just been touching their original prices finally started to creep up again because more people started buying graphics cards again.
Right.
So we tried to come up with some picks, and then lo and behold, we put those picks in there. And by the time we talked about them on the podcast last night, a lot of them were either sold out or the price had gone up already. So best thing we could say for GPUs this holiday season is just keep looking, keep a lookout for sales. It's kind of hard for these things to go on sale when they're sold out, even at not the sale price. That's the trick. So, unfortunately, that's just the world we live in right at this moment. Hopefully it won't stay that way for forever.
We wait with bated breath. Oh, my goodness. With that, ladies and gentlemen, the long, dark wait for GPU prices to come down begins once again. Perhaps next week we will report on MSRP prices being back and gaming system builds being possible, but I'm not holding my breath. You can find more of Alan Malventano at PCPer.com. If you want the latest in hardware storage news, he is the man to look at. He's even inventing new benchmarks, or has actually built new benchmarks to better test the way SSDs do the things they do to make you so happy when you run your PC. You can find more of me at techthing.com, or if you're into the whole home theater and audio thing, head on over to avxl.com. I appreciate you checking out either one of those. And thank you all for listening to this episode of This Week in Computer Hardware. You can find all the older episodes at twit.tv/TWICH, and you should go check it out. We got links so you can subscribe and not miss a single episode. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, once again, thank you so much for listening. I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Alan Malventano.
We'll see you next week on Twitch.